Thursday, everybody, and welcome back to Design and Grow. My name is Sam Chlebowski, joining you for another episode. And this week, we have Megan Weeks joining us on the podcast. Megan is the owner of Megan Weeks Design Co., which is a graphic design and brand consultancy based in Nevada, who helps wellness businesses create, refine, and develop strong brands that work across all platforms. Megan, how are you doing today?
I'm doing good. Thank you. Thanks for the intro. I love how you got every little piece of my bio in there. That's awesome.
Being a podcast host is a skill that I've been slowly trying to hone in. So I appreciate the
I'm
kind
already
words.
Impressed.
So Megan, what I typically like to start off with asking all of our guests, and a question I want to ask you, is what led you into starting your own business?
So basically 7 years ago, I was still in college, and it was like my junior year of being in college. And that's when I first sort of got introduced to using Photoshop for graphic design. So I remember one of our school projects, and I majored in journalism. So it was kind of unusual to be doing design projects, but one of our projects allowed us to create a flyer for a local business in our city. And that's when I first got a taste into graphic design, but I still didn't really understand that it could become a full-time career. So I didn't dive into it as much as I kind of wish I did back then, but I definitely found myself loving it, and it felt like a passion for me, from the get-go. And I even remember, when I was really little, just always being drawn to, creativity and crafting and projects. I first got a little bit of a taste in graphic design, and then I started going down the photography career, and that's what I really wanted to start doing, was, wedding photography and being a full-time photographer. But I thank that passion of mine in photography so much now, because that's what really allowed me to learn Photoshop and the Adobe programs. And then right after college, I was working at a marketing agency, and that was when I really started using graphic design. I was able to create websites, I was able to create logos, and I was still using Photoshop. I wasn't even super comfortable with Adobe Illustrator or any of the other programs yet, but that agency that I was working for, they ended up going under. It was kind of interesting to see, because I learned a lot with the project management situation at that company. It opened my eyes just how to work together as a team with clients. When they went under, that's when I got on Upwork, which was that freelancing platform. And that's when I started doing freelancing on my own. So 7 years later, I finally took the leap into running my own business. So this is only my first year as a full-time graphic designer. I've always been doing it as a side hustle, but this is my first year being full-time with it.
And I actually didn't know that until right now. And that is super exciting. So reflecting on your first year of full-time running your own business, what are the big things that you've learned?
I'm actually kind of glad I waited to take the leap into doing it, because I could have 3 years ago probably done this, but I really set myself up before going full-time with understanding how to manage clients, having the right contracts and proposals, really having the client management process down so that I wouldn't be wasting months and months figuring that out instead of actually designing. I learned a lot in that way, that's so important to have the project management stuff figured out before running your own business. But then also just finding a good balance with yourself, because when I did go full-time, I did not give myself any sort of break. I just jumped right into going crazy with it, from the moment I woke up to the moment I was ready for bed. And that I quickly realized you can definitely burn yourself out even if you love it, finding that balance of still taking care of yourself, but also having your business. So I definitely learned that lesson very quickly.
And the way that you approach that, I think, is super smart, that you were very intentional about setting up some of these systems and processes before you went ahead and kind of jumped in both feet into the deep end. How have you organized your process for working with clients? Because I think that this is something really helpful for other folks to know who are considering making a similar jump. What did that process look like for you? What tools did you end up using for that?
When I look back on when I didn't have any sort of tool, I definitely had a lot of trial and error and figuring out how many projects I can handle at a time and how to communicate with my clients the best way. A good friend of mine was using Dubsado, and that's when I first got introduced to programs online that can help you organize everything and have everything in one place. So that's where I have it currently. I have different areas of where I'm organizing things right now. I have my Google Calendar, And I have Dubsado for the contracts and proposals and more of like the forms that I need.
Very cool. Very cool. Getting clients, something we talk about a lot on this show. What have you been doing to get clients? Are you still on Upwork or are you getting also, you know, a stream of clients just like through your own marketing?
When I was working at the agency, I always made sure to like never burn a bridge and make sure that I was showing up as my best self. And I think that was what really helped me when I first kicked off doing it on my own, because word of mouth is so huge, especially where I live. Like, our city is pretty small and people talk, and you'll be surprised at how many people need graphic design help. So that's what really helped me in the beginning. And then Upwork was so successful for me 4 years ago. I feel like it's gotten so saturated now. And unfortunately, there's a lot of people on there that charge nothing for a logo. So it's hard to compete with that on Upwork. So right now, it's honestly social media. I try and make content every single day and get on TikTok, get on Instagram, get on YouTube. And that's been huge for me because you'll reach people from all over the world, which is awesome.
You know, you're pretty active on YouTube as well. Is that a marketing channel for your business as well? Or is it something like maybe just entirely different that you're doing?
Yeah, I feel like so lucky that it's turned into what it has now, because when I first started on YouTube, it's so embarrassing. I have videos that like are way old that I would do like fashion hauls or like show the clothing I bought online. And I was just doing it for fun. Like, I never thought YouTube would grow for me until I posted a video like 3 years ago about my logo design process. And that's when I reached the whole graphic design community. And I realized that there's a need for more voices in the community. And that's when I got more and more consistent on YouTube. And at the time, I really wasn't doing it for like financial benefits or anything like that. I just loved making videos. I have like a passion for that too. But I'm so thankful that I kept up with that, because YouTube is, in my opinion, the best platform for shelf life for your content. I have content from 3 years ago that are still getting a ton of views. And that's been so helpful for me and my business. And I would recommend it for anyone.
But it's funny how those things, if you are like the entrepreneurial type, how those little passion projects either evolve into something you didn't expect it, as the case with your YouTube video, or provide you the skills for something that you need later on down the road. A couple months ago, I had a food podcast I was doing with my friend.
That's awesome.
We were just kind of talking about food and food stories. And that was how I really learned like the ins and outs of podcasting. And that didn't go anywhere, but it set me up to be able to record this show each week and to suggest it.
Yeah. No, I'm a huge believer in that. Like, some of the things I've said yes to in the past definitely like could be considered a failure or whatever, but it led me to more opportunities. Yeah, I'm a big believer in that too.
So I wanted to switch gears completely.
Okay.
And ask you, as someone who is a designer, a brand consultant, what are some of your favorite brands out there?
Well, I definitely have some dream brands. I was thinking about that the other day, like dream brands I want to work with. I'm always drawn to minimalism and simplicity in a brand. And I love Lululemon. Of course, I love their clothing, but I also love just how simple everything is. It's just so like attractive to the eye. And I find that so cool that it's just so minimal yet effective. So that's definitely a brand I've always been drawn to. There's so many brands that I honestly just buy because of the look of it. Of course, there's makeup brands that I like. At Sephora, if you go in there, I'm always drawn to the ones with like the simple labeling. I just find that the most beautiful in my opinion. But I would say Lululemon is definitely up there for me in terms of a brand that I would love to work with one day.
So we can talk Sephora for a little bit, because I am very familiar. I've been in there way too many times with my wife. But the shampoo that she uses, Olaplex, has some really nice packaging, in my opinion. I don't know if you've seen that before, but I love their packaging.
I would agree. Yeah, that actually reminded me too. This isn't in Sephora, but it's a brand called Prose. It's P-R-O-S-E. And I recently purchased shampoo and conditioner from them because one of my friends was talking about it. And when it got delivered to me, it was like the most impressive packaging I've ever seen. They had like personalization all over it. Like, they had my name on the box.
Whoa.
This whole printout sheet of where I live and how that's affecting my hair health. I just thought that was so cool. I'm like, wow, they like really took their time to present everything to me.
That type of stuff can be so powerful sometimes. The folks that really change the game with their packaging, of course, is Apple. Everybody's saving all of the Apple boxes that they got. Yeah. There's a reason why you do that, because it's not just a cardboard box. You're like opening an experience. And I don't know about you, but I have, I think, reused one of those boxes a single time.
Oh, yeah.
When I like sold a phone by myself. One time. out of dozens by now Apple devices.
No, same here. The other day, like, I had my Apple Watch box that I've had for like years. Why do I not want to throw this away? And it's still in my desk drawer. I'm like, I don't know what I'm gonna do with it, but it's nice. And same thing for that hair brand, the card that they put in the box with the details of where I live and the environment and how it affects everything. I literally use it as a bookmark in my book. So yeah, it works.
I know that within your business, you have kind of defined your niche as like wellness businesses. How did you decide on that? Was that kind of a slow evolution, or was that something that you just said, hey, this is where I want to be, so this is what I'm going to kind of associate myself to? How did that process of niching down come about for you?
Yeah, that's a good question. So actually, this is a part I skipped over, but before I majored in journalism in school, I was going for a nutrition major. And I've always been passionate about just wellness, nutrition, and everything to do with that, but I'm terrible at science. So I changed my major quickly, but I always knew that was also a passion of mine. Before I niched down, I was like really afraid to niche because I was afraid I was going to miss out on other people not in the wellness industry. I really like working with everyone, but I just found myself saying yes to projects that were below my benchmark pricing and that just weren't really fulfilling me as much as wellness companies were. So that's when I decided, why don't I just combine those two passions and show up as an expert in that industry visually for the wellness companies? So far, it's been great. And I feel like it's allowed me to connect with more wellness companies. So ultimately, it ended up working in my favor. But it took me a long time to take that leap into niching because it is a scary thing to do when you are afraid you're going to miss out on things. But I still get inquiries that aren't sometimes wellness companies. And that just proves to me that you're still going to talk to people that aren't specifically in that area, no matter what.
The process that you described and kind of how you found that niche over time is something that I've seen personally when we were running Brighter Vision, and is something that I've kind of openly told people. You have to look at the people that you have worked with and the businesses you've worked with previously and see what made that work, but also understand the type of business that I want to work with as well. And when those two things kind of synergize, that is the moment that it seems like, at least most of the people I've asked this question to, where they're like, yes, this is what I should be doing. This is my niche. So it takes a little bit of time. And I think that the example you had shared, how you were doing work on Upwork originally, that's like a great way to build a portfolio if you are a new designer.
Totally.
But I do think that that moment where you have to decide to change the messaging on your website, change your positioning, maybe alter the services you're providing, it can be scary. And it's been scary for me. I know you had said that it was a little nerve-wracking for you. But I guess what I'm trying to say is, if you make the jump, it's going to be fine. And there's a lot of benefits you can get from that.
Totally. Like you said, I recommend that for new designers to not come out the gates with a niche if you don't really know if you like working in that area. I think a lot of times it might sound really awesome to work for a certain industry, and then it just isn't as great as maybe you think it might be, or like it just might not live up to like what you thought. So I think experimenting and getting that experience before deciding is really smart. Like I said, you're not really going to miss out on clients. They're not going to be like, I'm not talking to her because she's only wellness. They're most likely still going to reach out to you if they like your work. And that's something I had to kind of learn too.
I wanted to talk a little bit further about client process. And in the first year of your business, you shared some kind of lessons that you had learned. And that was one of the big things, having a process for that. What are some of the challenging hurdles that folks who are going full-time into their design business might face when they're managing multiple client projects at once that you've experienced lately, and how did you solve those things?
There's definitely a lot of things that can happen. And I feel like something that you can't always plan for is the project not going exactly through the timeline as you wanted it to. Because there's been lots of times where I know how many projects I can handle at a time, but if that branding project goes past the 3-week mark that we planned for, it might run into my other projects, which will require me to be a little bit overwhelmed and have a lot on my plate. So making sure that you account for like additional time that could potentially happen that you might need is important, because I used to tell clients, oh yeah, I can do your logo in like 2 weeks. But now I tell them like 4 weeks. It's better to provide it sooner and surprise them that like we finished it early than to have to tell them it's going to take another 2 weeks. That's something I had to kind of learn, is it's okay to tell them it'll take some more time, and also to let them know the amount of time it will take is dependent on the feedback I get and how quickly you respond. That's something that's really important too, because that can quickly get out of hand if everything gets run into each other and you have 10 projects at once. And that's happened to me before and it's overwhelming. So
under promise and over deliver was something that we basically had written on the wall at Brighter Vision, where like exactly what you just said, tell a client it's going to take longer and surprise them. That's going to be a lot easier. And you're going to get a lot less pushback than if you're consistently setting up these deadlines for yourself that are unattainable. Because when you are the business owner, you know, you ultimately control the timelines. And if you are too busy, it's a change that you can make.
Exactly. So important. The worst news to tell them, like, oh, it's going to be another month now. Sorry. That's definitely a part of the process that I had to kind of learn as I went. But then also making sure that you have a good communication style set up. I remember in the past, I didn't really tell them I only like emailing, or maybe we should just hop on calls. So there was clients in the past that would text me and talk about work on text, and that just also would get overwhelming. So I think having a good process up front of how you prefer to communicate, setting those boundaries in your business too is important.
I love that point that you've made. And it's something that seems like on the surface is pretty simple, but once you get into it is something that is complex to an extent. But the reason why it's complex is because it's so incredibly important. If you're not controlling the medium of communication, and communication is happening across all of these different systems, you can't track anything. You can't log anything. You can't know where there's holes in the ship that you need to patch within your process.
I just actually was making some content about making sure that you never start a project without a contract, because even if it's like your friend or a family member or someone that you really trust, I think it's important to have that process no matter who it is you're working with, because you just never know. Like, you never know what can happen. And contracts just protect both of you two, and it makes sure that you're on the same page. And that's important to have. Referring to my old experiences when I didn't have a contract and things happened where maybe the revisions went past the amount that I usually let them go past, and another month down the line, still working on revisions and you're not getting paid for that. It's just important to have that contract from the get-go, no matter who it is you're working with.
In your contracts, how intentional and how much detail do you have to provide to the scope of the project to avoid that sort of like scope creep?
Yeah, I've been adding to my contract every year for the past like 7 years. Mine, I would say mine's actually probably smaller than most people's, because I just kind of go over the basics of this is the scope of the project. And then I also go into the details of like how many revisions before additional charges. And then I also have an area for them to initial under the important parts, so that I make sure that they're actually looking at it and reading it. Another important line item on my contract is that they're paying on the payment plan due dates. And if they don't pay on those payment plan due dates, that there could be an additional fee for a late fee. Because I've had clients in the past where they think that since the project isn't moving along as they thought it would, that they don't need to pay until they get that next deliverable. But in reality, it's just that's the payment plan that's set up and that's what they need to follow. So I have like line items that kind of go over those types of things.
When I've had to like bring contracts into conversations that there was an issue for whatever reason, a contract is almost like a third party arbitrator for that conversation between the client, basically calling over your manager to explain the rule to them.
Yeah.
So you don't have to bear that blame, but you can say, yes, hey, I put it here. I clearly explained it. You need to pay even if this isn't going to the schedule you had in mind because of X, Y, and Z delays on your end. So
totally.
Yeah, it's some really phenomenal points about that, and something I haven't really talked about recently, but isn't so incredibly important to your business and the health of it.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely an important part of the process that I recommend doing before you even start the designing. Super important.
And in the future, our goal of what we're trying to do here at Motion.io, just a shameless plug, is, you know, right now we're focused on like what happens directly after the contract to the end of that project. But within a couple months, we hope to build out full contracts, invoicing, proposals right into the platform, So all of that can be managed in like a streamlined system. And
awesome.
You can do things like how you mentioned, where you don't have all of these communication channels. You just have one, which is what we hope Motion.io will become. So
that's awesome.
Outside of work, what do you like to do?
I actually play soccer. I play on an indoor soccer team. And then, so I'm not a reader. I usually hate reading, but I've been reading the Colleen Hoover books. I don't know if you've been hearing about that.
No, I haven't.
They're addicting. Like, I've been reading those in any free time I can get. And sometimes that's hard to come by, especially when you have your own business. You have to kind of make the time to go do those hobbies and do those things. But her books are so good. So I've been reading those a lot. And honestly, just hanging out with my boyfriend and my cat, making sure that I do step away from the computer and, you know, just like live your life too. Because I think what I said in the beginning of not knowing how to find that balance at first and just working all the time, it definitely was catching up to me. And I felt like I wasn't showing up as my best self every day because I wasn't allowing myself to go get my workout in or go enjoy my time with my boyfriend and my cat and like doing those things that fill you up and make sure that you can show up your best self. So it is important to have those hobbies and get outside and step away. And actually, I have realized that stepping away and doing things that aren't related to my work makes me more creative. So I'm a big believer in finding those hobbies outside of work.
Yeah. And it's a really interesting point to me because, yeah, you are a creative professional and you need to have the energy to put that creativity into your business. I feel like if you're caught up so often in the day to day, that you don't have a time to step away. It's like, you know, you'll just get beaten down day after day trying to rack your brain for new creative ideas.
I'm sure a lot of creatives can totally resonate with this, but not every day I'm feeling my most creative. I get creative at certain hours of the day, and I've had to kind of learn what hours those are and really just diving into those times of the day. When I quit my 9-to-5 job and took my business full time, I would feel so guilty not sitting at my desk from 9-to-5. And it was like the weirdest mental thing I had to get over because I can work on my own schedule now. And if I design better from like 3 to 5 o'clock, I can just work during that time if I'm my most effective. Because in the morning, I'm still kind of waking up. And I've had to learn that over time too. It's okay to have my morning to do the things that make me show up the most creative later in the day.
As a business owner, it's like you have that freedom and you've done the hard work to create that freedom for yourself. Yeah. And I think that if you're not leveraging that to a certain extent, why are you doing it in the first place? But I do resonate with that a lot, that wanting to sit at a desk from 9-to-5, from like normal working hours.
Yeah.
But then after time, and this is something I've recently gotten over, you realize that like, if I want to go do something else, if I have like stuff I need to go do around the house or just want to take a break, I can come back to this and work on it later at 9 or 10 o'clock if I want to. So two final questions before we sign off here. One, kind of fun. Second one, more business. First one, the fun one. So I saw that you have this video series that you did for a little while, the Wine and Design series. As somebody who is, you know, really just getting into wine like over the past year, what are your favorite types of wine to drink? Any go-to bottles, go-to regions, flavors?
Yeah.
Let it fly.
Yeah, I have a favorite. It's a little more pricey at the grocery store, but it's the Meiomi Pinot Noir. So good. But that's usually like an occasional bottle because it is a little pricier. But I also really like the Trader Joe's brand of their organic wines because I've been trying to do like more of the organic wines because I've heard that it has less like sulfites and it's supposed to be better for you. Trader Joe's organic wine is so good. And it's really affordable too.
Meiomi is one that I've had before. It's actually a bunch of my in-laws like really love it. And
really
wine prices where they live, it's like, you know, kind of deeper in Colorado.
Okay.
Or, you know, there's a bigger markup out there. So they'll come down to here in Denver and buy it because it's, you know,
that's awesome.
I think $4 or $5 cheaper.
So I need to do that. Fly to Colorado and bring a suitcase.
Thanks for answering the fun question. Final question for this episode. If people want to learn more about you, they want to see your content, where should they go?
Yeah, so I am the most active on YouTube and you can just type in Megan Weeks and that'll come up on YouTube. But I'm also on Instagram and TikTok at Megan Weeks Design Co. And yeah, I'm active on all of those platforms and the
I'd love to connect with everyone there.
Amazing. And we will put links to all of that in the show notes of this episode. Thank you, everybody, for listening and joining in on this episode of Designing Growth. Megan, any final things to add before we sign off here?
Thank you so much for having me on. I really appreciate it. And if I could tell anyone anything, if they feel the pull and the drive to take their business full time, I say take the risk and do it, because there's no such thing as failure. You're going to learn no matter what.
I love it. Yeah, do it. Start that business, make that leap, grow to that next level. I think that that is a perfect way to sum up this episode. Megan, thank you so much for sharing your time and your expertise today. Can't thank you enough. Take care, everybody, and talk to you next week. Bye-bye.